Now we're back with more of our look at all of today's matches on Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Let's go!
On Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Let's kick it for another hour of Atlanta Soccer Tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. I'm Jason Longshore. If you guys have not found AST by now, it's usually on Tuesday nights at 10 o'clock. Although this Tuesday it will be at 11 o'clock after the Argentina match ends. It's the summer of soccer, so you're going to get bonus editions of Atlanta Soccer Tonight all summer long, post-game shows after every U.S. men's national team game. The U.S. men's national team won 2-0 earlier this evening over Bolivia. Goals from Christian Pulisic and Falaron Balogun in front of 47,800 fans in Dallas, Texas. I think that number is going to be a little bit higher at Mercedes-Benz Stadium on Thursday when the U.S. come to visit. They will face Panama at 6 p.m. Oh, it's an earlier time than you might be used to. Get off work early. Maybe don't go to work. Sorry, I don't want to imply that there should be any degenerate behavior, but, you know, tailgates are fun and stuff. So do what you got to do. Get into the bins on Thursday and make some noise for the U.S. men's national team as they host Panama in game two of the Copa America. Panama right now, halftime against Uruguay. 1-0 lead for Uruguay. A golazo from Maximiliano Araujo in the 16th minute. That's the difference in that one. If that result holds, then the U.S., if that result holds as it is, the U.S. will lead Group C in the Copa America with on goal differential. Uruguay would be right there with them in points, and Panama and Bolivia would be chasing their first points in the tournament. Now, keep in mind the format difference between the Copa America with 16 teams and the top two going through in each group, very cut and dried, and the Euros, where the top two plus four of six third-place teams will go through to the knockouts. It's much more confusing on the European Championship side of things. Scotland was eliminated from the Euros today. They finished last in their group. Hungary finished third. They have 3 points. They might advance. It's not clear yet if they will or not. Germany won that group. They drew 1-1 with Switzerland today. Switzerland will advance the knockout round as the second-placed team in the group. Atlanta United last night, we're going to talk more about this in the next segment, a 1-1 draw in St. Louis. 4 points on the road trip. They went to D.C. and won on Wednesday, then stayed on the road. They stayed in D.C. through Friday, trained there Thursday and Friday, then flew to St. Louis and had to battle back in this one. St. Louis scored their first goal in a long time. It was nearing 400 minutes of scoreless soccer for St. Louis. They got the goal through Savannah-born Indiana Vasilev to open the scoring, but Atlanta battled back, and Daniel Rios was able to level it after a penalty was saved. Again, we'll get into more of the details and look ahead to Atlanta United and Toronto next weekend. That'll be in the next segment on AST. As seeing that we are live from here in O'Sullivan's in downtown Decatur, we got to talk a little bit about the home team. The home team here in Decatur, Decatur FC. They are in the WPSL, first year in the league. It is a women's amateur slash semi-pro summer league. So a very short season, 9 games in the league format. It is regionally composed. So if you win your region, then you go into the national tournament bracket. Decatur playing with other teams in the metro area like Georgia Impact from Canton, UFA Gunners, which are based north of the city but play their games at Oglethorpe University, Atlanta Fire United, which plays their games in Cumming at Pinecrest Academy, also teams in Chattanooga, in Knoxville, 2 teams in Nashville, and a team in Birmingham in this region. It's been a really competitive region this year. And Nashville Rhythm has been the top team in the region, but Decatur FC, first year out of the blocks, led by head coach Campbell Chapman, this has been a really exciting team to watch. I was on the call alongside Jessica Charman, who you hear from on AST next week in our various shows. I was on the call with Jess on Friday night as Decatur beat South Georgia Tormenta from the W League 7-2 in front of almost 1,500 fans on a very hot evening. It's a really cool setup for Decatur FC. Their last home game is coming up this upcoming Saturday as they host Nashville Rhythm, a really big game because Decatur FC has an opportunity to win the conference in their first year of competition. Now, they do have one loss on the season to 865 Alliance. 865 Alliance out of Knoxville does have a game in hand. So Decatur's going to need a little bit of help, and they have to win their last two games. They play the top two teams in the division in their last two games. Nashville Rhythm in second place, UFA Gunners in first place. The game with Decatur and UFA Gunners, Monday evening, 7 o'clock at Oglethorpe University on July 1st. The division might be decided in that game. Decatur played in Chattanooga tonight. 4-1 winners. Bree Barley opened the scoring. Chattanooga leveled it at 1-1 before halftime. Maysoon El-Shami made it 2-1. Carrie Consolino and Sarah Greiner extended the lead. And that moves Decatur into third place with two games left. Really interested to see if this Decatur FC team can get it done. Like I said, they're going to need some help as 865 Alliance has a game in hand. And Decatur's got to go beat the top two teams in the region. They lost to 865 earlier in the year. But we talked about it on the broadcast on Friday. One of the number one things that has jumped out to me about this Decatur team, almost every player, I think with two exceptions, is from the state of Georgia. Not just one part of Georgia. A lot of players from the Atlanta metro area, obviously, but players from Athens, Callie Mon from Georgia State, who went to North Oconee High School. This is a team with players at various colleges, quite a few Georgia State players in the group, but other SEC schools are represented, and not just Division I players that are producing and showing so well right now. Mention the goal scorers tonight. Bree Barley from Georgia State, Sarah Greiner from Tennessee, but Carrie Consolino from Clayton State and Maysoon El-Shami from North Georgia, the Peach Belt Conference, representing for Decatur FC. That's, I think, what's been so exciting is to see all of these local players from various situations, whether they're playing a lot with their college teams, whether they're not getting a ton of time there, whether they're playing at big schools, whether they're playing at smaller schools, to see the overall talent and how it has come together for this team. It's exciting, well-played soccer. So if you're not coming to the Benz for Atlanta United next Saturday night and you're looking for something maybe a little bit smaller, you want to support the women's game, Decatur FC is definitely one to keep up with. It is the last home game of the season. It's a really cool setup. A lot of people start the evening here at O'Sullivan's in downtown Decatur. It is a very short walk down the hill to Decatur High School to see these matches, and it's a perfect setup. It's a really good wide pitch at Decatur High School, and the stadium, you're right on top of the action. Great viewpoints. It's a very good atmosphere as well. All of these things have come into place for Decatur FC in their first year. It's been really exciting to be part of it, and I can't wait to see how it grows over the next few years as the WPSL Southeast is going to be a division to watch nationally as the WPSL is exploring what professional soccer could look like at a lower division level, but what that could look like. Georgia Impact have already signed a letter of intent to continue that exploration process. Would not be surprised if Decatur FC was going to be part of that at some point down the road, especially with the attendances that they have drawn in year number one. You're listening to a special edition of Atlanta Soccer tonight, live from downtown Decatur, O'Sullivan's Pub on the Square. But also, this is a special edition because it is part of the Summer of Soccer. Copa America going on, the European Championships going on, MLS still going on, mentioned WPSL going on, USL League 2, USL W League going on here in the Atlanta metro area. So much happening that your head is spinning at times trying to keep up with all of it. One thing that's happening right now is Uruguay and Panama. They've started the second half. The Uruguayans, led by Marcelo Bielsa, leading 1-0. A rocket of a goal from Maximiliano Alarujo got that one started. He scored pretty early in the first half, and they are in control of this one over the U.S. men's national team's next opponent in Panama. Panama playing a 5-4-1 here. I'd expect to see the same against the U.S., but maybe not the same level of fear. Should Panama be a little more afraid of the U.S.? I don't know yet, honestly. I think the U.S. got off to a good start in this tournament. A 2-0 win tonight over Bolivia. That was the expectation. I do think the spread was actually 2 in that one, if you are into the juice boxes. It's probably right. And I think it was a controlled, very composed, very professional kind of a win for the U.S. men's national team. They started well, which was the biggest key in this one. I always have this conversation when Atlanta United, for example, is playing in the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup and they're playing a lower division team. You can't let that smaller team grow larger in the game. And they do that by hanging around. You can't let them build confidence in games like that. If Bolivia had kept that scoreless for a while, then they would have grown in confidence, maybe been able to find a break, maybe been able to find a goal to give them something in the game. No. The U.S. came out and were dominant early on, and that was the key in this one. After the match, Christian Pulisic talked to Jenny Taft of Fox, and this is what he said about that start.
Yeah, I mean, we came out flying with a lot of intensity. Obviously, the early goal helped us a lot. And, I mean, all around a pretty dominant performance. I think we could have put it away and had a couple more goals there. But definitely a really good start from the guys.
Look, and that's the next step for the U.S. men's national team is putting things away, completely defined away, sooner. They had a 2-0 lead going into halftime. I know the old cliche is a 2-0 lead is the most dangerous lead in soccer. I never agree with that. I think you just remember the times that teams cough up a 2-0 lead. You have a 2-goal lead. You should be able to handle it. But a 3-goal lead is even better, isn't it? And the U.S. wasn't able to do that. And one of the reasons why is I think one of the biggest questions for this team right now in the Copa America and probably looking ahead a little down the road as they prepare for the 2026 World Cup, one of the biggest questions is who should be the starting striker for this team. And it has not been completely defined. Folarin Balogun is the incumbent right now. And I think he should be the incumbent right now. But I also expect more production from him than what you're seeing at the moment. 4 goals in 13 games with the U.S. men's national team is pretty good. It's a pretty good return. But I didn't think he played well, honestly, before he found the goal in this one. Now, full credit to him, it's a well-taken goal. But his overall performance, not as high as I expected it to be. He got the start over Ricardo Pepi. I think he deserved to get the start. Pepi came on and put himself into very good positions, but Ricardo Pepi did not get that third goal for the U.S. to put the game away. So I don't think the striker depth chart has changed or should change yet for the U.S. men's national team. Now, will it when Josh Sargent is fully healthy and ready to contribute? I don't think it should with him either yet. I think he's got to show that he can do what he's done at the club level. I think in increasing numbers, he's got to show that he can do that at the national team level. A couple other things about the U.S. match as we wrap up this segment, the first one of our number two of Atlanta Soccer tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. The overall starting lineup, we've talked about the striker position. I said before the game I thought Timothy Weah would be one of the most important players for the U.S. in this match. He was very good. He was very strong in this when he created 3 chances. Had some opportunities to go to goal himself. I thought he did everything that you wanted him to do in this match. But again, when we talk about production overall, you want that little bit extra in these games from these kinds of players. And you're not quite getting enough from Timothy Weah. If he can break out, in my opinion, he can elevate this team to another level. One person that can also elevate this team to another level that you will not have this summer is Sergiño Dest. The right back position was one that I had kind of zeroed in on coming into the tournament. What would Greg Berhalter do with that position? He made the sensible decision here to start Joe Scally. Scally was fine. He wasn't really tested in this match against Bolivia. He will be tested more and more as the tournament goes on. He's got to show that he can play at this level. I don't think he did well last time we saw him against Jamaica. You need to see more from him in this tournament. Will we? Well, we might start that process on Thursday as the U.S. plays Panama. 6 o'clock start at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Post-game show for that one, a special AST, will start at 9 o'clock on Thursday night. But before we get there, we got a couple more segments tonight on AST. Next one is going to be talking about Atlanta United, a four-point road trip. This is a team that's starting to get results on the road with increasing regularity, and a team with an interim manager. What's next for Atlanta United? We'll talk about that coming up here in just a couple of minutes on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Look back at today's matches with Atlanta Soccer Tonight
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back, Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. I'm Jason Longshore, hanging out live in downtown Decatur at O'Sullivan's Pub. Viewing party earlier tonight for the U.S. men's national team, a 2-0 win over Bolivia to start their Copa America journey that will move on to Atlanta on Thursday. Should be a very big crowd at the Benz for a 6 o'clock kick against Panama. Panama currently trailing 1-0 against Uruguay in their Copa America opener this evening. Uruguay expected to win the group. U.S. expected to finish second. Panama almost leveled the match. Big save from the Uruguayan goalkeeper. So far, everything is going to expectation in the Copa America. Not really any big surprises as of yet. Maybe Venezuela beating Ecuador was a surprise. A couple of other things from the U.S. win tonight as we close the book on that one. Christian Pulisic, he scored in the third minute. 30th goal of his international career. That puts him level with Brian McBride for fifth on the U.S. men's national team all-time scoring list. He also became the third player, joining Wijnaldum and Clint Dempsey, to score in five different competitions. He also became the first U.S. men's national team player because he assisted on Folair and Balogun's goal to provide assists in five different competitions. The goal was 2 minutes and 23 seconds into the game. It was the fastest the U.S. men's national team has ever scored against a South American opponent in a competitive match, and the fastest the U.S. men's national team has ever scored in the Copa America. Good win for the U.S. I don't think a great win, but a good win for the U.S. 2-0 over Bolivia to start things off in their Copa America campaign. Atlanta United. Speaking of campaigns, they are into the second half of their Major League Soccer campaign. Couple of games on the road in this past week. It has been a very busy week for me. DC on Wednesday, came back to Atlanta for the Argentina-Canada game on Thursday. Also was on the call for the Decatur FC, Tormenta, WPSL, USLW League friendly on Friday, then flew to St. Louis on Saturday morning. Lots of Atlanta United fans made that trip. Lots of Atlanta United fans were on my plane to St. Louis on Saturday morning. And I think they got their money's worth on the trip. It was a 1-1 draw. It was a very combative game. Might not have been the prettiest of games. And I think St. Louis and their style has something to do with that. There's no way around it. They're a team that doesn't necessarily want the ball. They're a good pressing team. They are a team that tries to disrupt their opponent more than tries to, I think, dominate their opponent. Also, I think one of the other reasons why the game felt a little disjointed was Atlanta United's missing players, and they were missing Thiago Almada last night due to yellow card accumulation. He picked one up for dissent early in the match in DC. So no Almada last night. You take away a little bit of extra quality on the ball. So for Atlanta United, they had to find a different way. They started in a little bit different shape than we had seen them start in lately. They went back to three center backs in DC on Wednesday night in the 1-0 win there. little bit more of a traditional 5-3-2 in that one, with Almada as the 10, Dax McCarty, Tristan Muyamba behind him, three center backs, Noah Cobb, Derek Williams, Efrain Morales, the expected wing backs, and Caleb Wiley and Brooks Lennon. Sean De Silva started in a kind of a second forward role alongside Daniel Rios in that one. So in St. Louis, it was a little different because of the absence of Almada and also fatigue and just guys coming back from injury, things you had to do a little bit differently. Also the opponent, the way that St. Louis presses versus DC's direct play that doesn't really have the same pressing component to it. So Atlanta was a little bit more in a 5-2-3 to start that did morph more into what you would expect in a 5-3-2. But one of the big things that jumped out to me in the game last night in St. Louis was the play of Jay Fortune. So he replaced Dax McCarty to start in this match, and he was brilliant, especially in the first 45. It was maybe Fortune's best game at this level in an Atlanta United shirt. I thought he was a very important part of the match. Ultimately, he hit the bar with a shot that I thought was going to find the back of the net. He did not. He had a lot of good plays in this match, but didn't find that breakthrough. Now, Atlanta conceded first. We thought they had conceded a little bit earlier than they actually did. And I guess we should probably start there when we're talking about last night's 1-1 draw in St. Louis and kind of get it out of the way. This is what it sounded like when we thought St. Louis had scored the opener on 92.9 The Game last night.
Atlanta countering. Sean De Silva, a back heel to Muyamba behind center circle. Muyamba then stuffed by Lubin. Play on. Back the other way. Roll the head. Vasilev, right side of the 18. Dribbles into the box. Here's his cross. The penalty spot. Shot tipped in.
Flag is up.
Flag does come up. Flag does come up. I think it was tipped in by an offside player.
Yeah, I think it's the tip.
I think it was deflected in by an offside player, Klaus, or Klaus at least obstructing on the play.
It was a chaotic situation, if you couldn't tell from that clip with me and Mike Conti last night. There were a lot of things going on, and let's go back to where we ended there. So the flag went up. The goal was not allowed. Now, the video assistant referee, Yunus Merakchi, got involved. He has either gotten involved or not gotten involved in previous situations where you would have expected the opposite action from him. But I guess that's Yunus when he is cooking in the VAR booth. And he got involved on multiple things here, which was very, very confusing as we were trying to break it all down. Let's go back to the offside decision. The offside decision was interference. The ball deflected off of an Atlanta United player. Joao Klaus was in an offside position, and he was impacting Brad Guzan's ability to play the ball. He wasn't blocking his line of sight. And I think at times we get hung up on line of sight as the definitive thing about an offside player impacting the play. I don't think it's that simple, and not every referee feels like it's that simple either. I've seen it called both ways, and since 2020 when Caden Clark scored a goal that Daniel Royer was in an offside position impacting Brad Guzan at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, in an empty Mercedes-Benz Stadium during the return to action from the pandemic. Ever since then, I have begged IFAB, who oversees the laws of the game, FIFA, Major League Soccer, the Professional Referees Organization, to clarify how this should be called. And I think what they should do is just literally follow the laws of the game. Line of sight is not there. That is an interpretation that the Professional Referees Organization has held on to. But as we saw last night, that's not the interpretation that was used by the referee, Filip Dujic, and the assistant referee. And it's not the interpretation that we've seen used in Champions League games, for example. In other competitions, for example, you want consistency. And you don't have to be in the line of sight to impact the goalkeeper if you're in an offside position. The ball could deflect off of that player, and the goalkeeper doesn't know if the player's offside or not. The player, if they are within the range of vision, maybe that's the phrase we need to start using, can impact the play. So the fact that the video assistant referee got involved in the first place to look at the offside portion of it, in my opinion, is completely and utterly incorrect. because they can't make that judgment better than the referee and the AR. If, and we don't know because we didn't hear the conversation, but if the explanation, as the referee very comically announced to the stadium, the offside, it was ruled that the player, Joao Klaus, was not offside, and maybe the phrasing should have been different, not impacting the play in an offside position because he was in an offside position. At least it appeared from the angles we saw. So the VAR getting involved in that, to me, feels like a gigantic overreach because they can't make that call better than the referees on the field. That's something that we have to get out of the video assistant referee room in Major League Soccer and in all competitions, to be perfectly honest. We saw the video assistant referee in Atlanta United's game against Charlotte get involved when they shouldn't have. They didn't have an angle that was better than what the AR saw, and they gave a goal that was not given on the field, and it dramatically changed that match. Video assistant referees have to stay in their lane. They are not there to re-referee games. They are there to support the referee, not argue with the referee about what call should be made, as we have also heard in an Atlanta United match this season, not lobby for things, support the referee. You don't see ARs lobbying for things. You see them supporting the referee. The video assistant referee is part of the referee team for the match. They are there to support, not referee the match. So I had a big issue with that. If you listen to the broadcast, I think you understood where I was coming from. I don't like how all of this went down. But here's the crazy element of it. The video assistant referee also recommended, and I think they had to look at contact inside the 18 and decide that it wasn't a penalty because that happened in that play. But the video assistant referee also looked at the beginning of the incident where Tristan Muyamba, the ball is taken away from him by Edward Leuven. That was determined to be a foul at the beginning of the attacking phase of play. It was not called a foul on the field. The referee was right there, a judgment call, and the referee decided that it should not have been a foul. After looking at it in a replay situation, the referee changed their opinion. This came after the referee and the AR changed their opinion on if Joao Klaus was in an offside position. So to clean it all up and try to make sense of it, on the field, it was no goal due to offside. The VAR said, at least the referee agreed, we don't know exactly how it went down because we didn't hear the conversation. After intervention from the VAR, it was agreed that Joao Klaus was not impacting the play from an offside position, or the offside was taken away, so the goal would have stood. However, as Philip Tugent said very comically on the mic, the play that started the sequence, Leuven on Muyamba, was judged to be a foul using replay, so that negated the goal. So at the end of it, we find out that it's still not a goal, but it's a different reason why it's not a goal. And the way it was delivered didn't really help the situation with St. Louis and Atlanta United and how they felt about the referee crew and how the fans felt about the referee crew. It was very complicated. St. Louis did find the opener through Indiana Vasilev not that long later, and Atlanta had to battle back, and they did. This is what the equalizing goal from Daniel Rios sounded like last night.
Goal. First penalty Berkey has faced this year. Rios to take it. Action at the goal to our left. 71st minute for the equalizer. Rios up to it. Strikes it. Save. Rebound. Score! Berkey spilled the rebound right to Rios, who slam dunks it.
Daniel Rios stayed with the play, and I'll give Daniel Rios a ton of credit for what we've seen from him as of late with Atlanta United. No more Yorgos Yakimakis. He did finally say goodbye to the Atlanta United fans. He posted it last night on his Instagram account. That was much appreciated, and it was strange that it hadn't happened up until that point. So you can close the book on that. It's Daniel Rios. It's Jamal Tiare right now. Carlos Bocanegra told us in the pregame show on Wednesday that they hope to have a striker as soon as possible. The transfer window opens July 18th for Major League Soccer, and they would love to be in a position where that striker's walking in the door day one that he can. You can never guarantee the timeline of these things. Right now, it's Daniel Rios and Jamal Tiare. Different kinds of players. But Rios and his persistence relentlessness was a word that Rob Valentino used after the game that he really talked about with his team going into last night. That's a good way to describe Daniel Rios and his performances. The goal against Houston, it's a long ball. He doesn't win it initially, but he stays with the play. He wins it back. He creates an opportunity for Luke Brennan to put in a cross. Then he continues to stay with the play, and he puts in the rebound after a nice save from Steve Clark. Another rebound situation last night. The penalty, full credit to Roman Berkey, he ends up waiting Rios out. Maybe stepped off his line before the shot was taken. It was a little hard to tell from what I had, what I was working with. But Rios didn't put his head down. He didn't get frustrated. He didn't give up on the play. He found the rebound and slotted it at home. Daniel Rios has done a very good job for this team up top as of late. Jay Fortune did a great job with this team last night. Brooks Lennon, who you heard from on the full-time report, and you can go back and listen to that on Off the Woodwork. Lennon and Wiley and Cobb and Williams, and we saw Steon Gregerson split time last night with Efrain Morales. All were excellent. The goal from St. Louis, it did come from a turnover that started with Steon Gregerson, but you've got to get him games to knock that rust off. And look, you saw some of that rust last night, but ultimately Gregerson can elevate this team even further. Dax McCarty's been a warrior for this group lately, and he got stuck into some really big tackles last night that were much, much needed. Shondi Silva's run hot and cold, but he's given you some moments of brilliance. Thiago Almada gave you a moment of brilliance on Wednesday night that got you 3 points. So ultimately, you get through two games on the road, and you stay out on the road. You're away from home for quite a while, and you come home with 4 points out of six. Not too shabby. Now you're going into a match on Saturday at the Benz hosting Toronto FC. Maybe looking for a little bit of payback against Toronto, a team that you lost to earlier this season. Very, very, very cold evening in Toronto. The wind chill was under 20 for the entire match. You had water freezing on the ball during the match, as Brad Kazan told us afterwards. But Atlanta United and Toronto, it is a little bit of a rivalry, and Atlanta gets them back in their building. They'll get Thiago Almada back into the team. Now, I'll end with this on this segment of Atlanta Soccer Tonight. The rumors are out there about Thiago Almada and Eagle Football Group, which is Botafogo in Brazil, Lyon in France, Crystal Palace in England. The rumors are out there. Garth Lagerwey answered the question on the Five Stripes Countdown yesterday before the match that he had not spoken to them since an inquiry, I believe, in the winter transfer window. Hadn't spoken to them lately. Now, another report came out today that Eagle Football Group has talked to Thiago Almada's agent and are finding their agreement on personal terms before then Eagle Football Group reaching out to Atlanta United to find agreement on a transfer and a transfer fee. So stay tuned. Silly season is going to be silly. It will stay silly, and we will try to keep you posted with all the latest news in it and credible reporting about these situations as they continue to develop, whether it's incoming for Atlanta United or in this case, potentially outgoing. But Almada will be back in the squad on Saturday as Atlanta United hosts Toronto, 6:30 for the Five Stripes Countdown, 7:40 kickoff from the Benz. We'll have it here on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Coming up next to finish up this edition, the special edition of Atlanta Soccer Tonight, a bonus 3-4-3. Three players from the weekend that stood out to me. Four games to watch this upcoming week, and three things that made me smile about this game that I love so much. All that's coming up next on Atlanta Soccer Tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
We're live.
It's Puyo!
With Jason Longshore.
And it's the man from the back.
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back. Final segment of Atlanta Soccer Tonight, a special two-hour bonus edition on Sunday night, a post-game show of sorts for the U.S. men's national team. 2-0 winners over Bolivia. Maybe the worst team in the tournament, but a good performance to open the Copa America for the U.S. men's national team. They will be on their way tomorrow, I believe, to Atlanta to prepare for Thursday's match against Panama. I think tickets are still available, although I don't know how many of them are. Thursday night, 6 o'clock at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, game two of the group stage in the Copa America. But you guys who listen to Atlanta Soccer Tonight, you know that I end with a 3-4-3. Now, look, I've changed the format a little bit. We can change the formation on AST. You know, I've got the power to do that if I need to. But this one, it's going to be three players from the weekend, four games to watch this week, and three things that made me smile about this game that I love so much. So let's start with the players. Number one, I talked a little bit about him in the last segment, but Jay Fortune's performance last night for Atlanta United, and honestly, his performances for a little while with Atlanta United, they have been outstanding. The central midfielder developed in the Atlanta United Academy, previous captain of Atlanta United too, he delivered, I think, his best performance in an Atlanta United shirt last night in St. Louis. He had a shot off the bar. He contributed to the attacking portion of the field. He had big tackles and big defensive plays on the defensive side. Fortune is just one of those all-around central midfielders that can give you what you want out of a six, out of a defensive midfielder. He can give you what you want out of an eight, a box-to-box midfielder. And he can give you a little bit of what you want as a number 10, as a playmaker, as somebody who will impact the attacking third of the field as well. Jay Fortune is turning into a top guy in front of our eyes, and he's going to need to be, especially during the stretch of games for Atlanta United this summer. With games coming fast and furious, you're looking to Fortune and others, but especially Jay Fortune when he's in the kind of form that he was last night. You're looking for those big, big performances. Number two on the first three players from the weekend that stood out to me, I'm going to stay local. We're here in downtown Decatur at O'Sullivan's on the Decatur Square. Gareth O'Sullivan, the impresario of Decatur FC in the WPSL. A player who stood out to me, she scored tonight in Decatur FC's win in Chattanooga. She scored and was the player of the game on Friday night against South Georgia Tormenta, Sarah Greiner. Sarah Greiner, the young attacking player for Decatur FC, she's really come into her own in these last few games for the club. Really impressive to see what Greiner has given you. She went to high school at Flowery Branch. She plays at the University of Tennessee in the SEC. She's a player who typically plays off of the wing. Saw her play centrally a little bit on Friday night. Relentless. And I know I've used that word a few times tonight, but I think it applies to Greiner as well. She doesn't give up on plays. She is dynamic. She has good speed. But what I like about her is a little bit of directness in the attacking third. If she gets a lane to take a shot, she's not going to hesitate. She's going to power through and get that opportunity. A player who I didn't know very well coming into this WPSL season with Decatur FC, but a player who is finishing on a high as Decatur FC is chasing the top spot in the WPSL Southeast. And they have a couple of games to do it. They're back home in downtown Decatur next Saturday as they host Nashville Rhythm. And then they go just a little bit across town to Oglethorpe University on Monday, July 1st, where they will face the UFA Gunners, who are right now the number one team in the division. Number three on players from the weekend that stood out to me, Christian Pulisic. Pulisic, Captain America right now. He is in such great form, and he just looks like a different player after this season that he's had at Milan in Serie A. A player who there have always been big expectations for him. He was 17 when he played in his first Copa America, the Copa America Centenario for the U.S. in 2016. He has had big expectations from then. Remember just a year later where it felt like everybody was looking to him and some people were blaming him for the U.S. men's national team's failure to qualify for the 2018 World Cup and that loss down in Trinidad and Tobago. He was still a teenager at that point. He's still very young, but the maturity from him off the field, the maturity from him in a leadership role, and the maturity from the way that he plays, the maturity in his game, really impressive from Christian Pulisic. He opened the scoring And I think he led by example tonight in making this team, this U.S. men's national team, play like their hair was on fire to start the match against Bolivia. Sometimes you come into games against underdogs and you come in a little bit slower because you expect you're going to be able to handle things. You don't have the same intensity that you need to. Nuh-uh, not in this case. The U.S. men's national team came out with serious intensity. They almost had a goal in the first 90 seconds. They got one in the first 3 minutes from Pulisic, who assisted on the other one that Folair and Balogun put in before the end of the first half. So next on our modified 3-4-3, four games to watch this weekend. We could even call us a 3-2-2-3 if we want to, because I'm going to give you two games from the Euros and two games from Copa America to keep an eye on this week. Number one, it starts tomorrow. Italy and Croatia, a really interesting game in the European Championships when you look at the table in Group B. I said earlier, I think Spain has been the best team in the tournament so far. They are unbeaten. They have scored four goals. They have not conceded. Italy is number two in the group. They've won and they've lost. They have a goal differential of zero. They're in a pretty good spot here, although they are playing a very talented Croatian team. Albania has gotten a draw. They drew with Croatia last time out, so they have a point on the board. They have a minus one goal differential. Croatia has a minus three goal differential and 1 point. If Croatia wins, you would expect, well, if they win, they will go through unless Albania beat Spain and you're looking for help as a third-place team, which you would get if you have 4 points. 4 points as a third-place team will get you into the knockouts in the European Championships. Croatia is fully capable of beating Italy tomorrow. I will be very curious to see how Luciano Spalletti, the manager of the Italian national team, approaches this. So many times in tournament play, we have seen Italy be just a rock-solid wall defensively. I think Spalletti wants them to be more than that, but do they revert to type a little bit against Croatia in a game that if Italy wins and you expect Spain to deal with Albania and handle their business there, if Italy draws, they will go through as a second-place team. They will get into the knockout rounds, and that's where the tournament always starts for Italy. I think they will be able to handle that. I think they will be able to not sweat it, but here's the reason why this is a game to watch. This could be the end of the golden generation for Croatia that got to a World Cup final that has always, for some reason, come up a little bit shorter in the European Championships than in the World Cup. But a team that got to the semifinals last time in the World Cup and a team that has one of the greatest midfielders of this generation in Luka Modric, is this the last time we see him in a competitive game in that Croatia shirt? It could be if they don't get the job done. So I think they will come out and we will see the best that Croatia can muster at this point against Italy. I don't think it's going to be enough. I think Italy gets it done. I do think I would probably expect a draw in this one, but I think Italy will be able to handle everything that Croatia throws at them. That's tomorrow at 3 o'clock. The other game in the Euros to keep an eye on this week is the Netherlands against Austria. That is on Tuesday at noon. Group D, the Dutch are level with France at the top on 4 points. The Dutch have more goals scored, so they are ahead of France right now. Austria is in third on 3 points, in a pretty good spot to advance if that stays. Poland at the bottom of the group with no points. Bartosz Ślisz will be coming back to Atlanta very soon after the match on Tuesday. I don't know if he factors into Atlanta's game against Toronto on the weekend, but Austria is fully capable of beating the Netherlands. I haven't really been all that impressed with the Netherlands. I thought the Netherlands-France game was one of the worst games I've seen this summer, one of the worst games I've seen this year. It was not entertaining. It was not interesting. It was very, very boring. This Dutch team is kind of that. They've scored two goals in two games. They've only conceded once. They're solid. They are not spectacular. They are not interesting. Austria is interesting. They are not as talented as the Dutch, but Ralf Rangnick, with his pressing style, and it's modified a little bit at the national team level. It's not all-out Red Bull press, but it's a variation of it. Austria will not be easy for the Dutch, and I will give you a bold prediction here on this edition of AST on 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app. I think on Tuesday at noon, Austria gets the win over the Netherlands, and Austria goes through, not as the first place team in the group, because I think France will beat Poland, but as the second place team. And I think the Dutch will go through as the third place team. Game three to keep an eye on this week, Argentina and Chile. That will be Tuesday night at 9 o'clock. We'll have AST after that one finishes at 11 p.m., an hour back from our usual time on 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app. Argentina and Chile, look, it's always a rivalry game because South American, I think every country has a rival with every country, it seems like. But for these two specifically in the Copa America, remember 2015 or remember 2016 when Chile defeated Argentina in the final in both of those competitions, both times in penalties. One of those was Tata Martino in charge, and that's what led him to walk away from the Argentine national team and walk into Atlanta United from day one. That was a very interesting summer of 2016. That looked like it might have been Lionel Messi's last time with the Argentine national team. He actually retired after that tournament, that Copa America Centenario was completed. Now he came back, and he has obviously been much more successful with his results. But Chile's got the ability to be a difficult team for Argentina in this match on Tuesday night. Argentina, I thought, had a good second half against Canada. I know there was a lot of talk about the field. I don't think the field was the reason for why Argentina struggled in the first 45. I think Canada was the reason why Argentina struggled, and you have to give them that credit. But Argentina persevered and found their way through it. I think they will find their way through it against Chile, but I think it will be a much tighter game than it felt like last Thursday for Argentina and Canada. I think Chile will make it difficult for Argentina. I do think the Argentines will win, but it won't be easy. I think it might be a 1-0 game. We'll talk about it on AST Tuesday night at 11 on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. And don't forget, if you can't stay up with me for some of those late night ASTs, or you can't keep up with all my bonus editions that are popping up this summer, get subscribed to Off the Woodwork wherever you get your podcasts. You can always listen on the Odyssey app as well. Last game to watch this week, I've mentioned it a bunch of times already, USA-Panama in Atlanta at the Benz Thursday, 6 p.m. The biggest, most important game the U.S. men's national team has ever played. Well, not ever played, because it was a Gold Cup semifinal. That's not fair. I don't like to remember that Gold Cup semifinal the U.S. played against Jamaica in 2015. The biggest game the U.S. men's national team has played in a while because of the stakes and maybe a little bit of the uncertainty. Panama is now trailing Uruguay, and they were trailing 1-0. Now they are trailing 3-0. Game's gotten away from them a little bit. Their tournament will come down to if they can beat the U.S. in Atlanta. They will be playing it like it's a final. The U.S. needs to play it in the same way. It should be an amazing watch. I'm really looking forward to it. Tournament soccer is a whole different thing. It is going to be a blast on Thursday night, 6 o'clock. AST postgame show will start at 9 o'clock. I'll be at Reverb by Hard Rock right across the street from the Benz on Thursday after that game. I hope I'll be smiling after that game. There's no guarantees in the sport, as you guys know, but three things that have made me smile about this sport as of late. Number one, talked about Decatur FC a good bit tonight. As I was leaving Decatur Stadium on Friday night after their win over Tormenta, the huge line of kids, boys and girls, wanting to get autographs from Decatur FC players after that game, and knowing who the players were and knowing where they were from and wanting to get pictures. And just, it was so cool to see, for a summer league team in their first season, players who are playing in college, to get that opportunity to be superstars to kids. So cool to get a chance to see that. Number two on things that made me smile about the game lately, traveling support for Atlanta United yesterday in St. Louis. The 17s were loud in St. Louis. Over 300 of them, from my understanding. The season ticket holders that took advantage of the away tickets opportunities. Also, fans in the supporters groups who went on their own, and plenty of others. There were a lot of Atlanta United shirts on the plane on my trip up to St. Louis on Saturday morning. Amazing job by the supporters on the road. We saw a lot of them in D.C. as well, but St. Louis being the first time that the Five Stripes were out there, very, very cool. And number three on things that make me smile about the game, the U.S. men's national team back in Atlanta. I mentioned 2015. That was the last time That was 9 years ago. Before that, it was back to 1977. The U.S. will be playing in Atlanta more with the U.S. Soccer Federation building its national training center and its headquarters just south of town in Trillith. Expect that. You're going to see the U.S. men's national team. You're going to see the U.S. women's national team here in Atlanta quite a bit. But this is a special one, and this is a game with a different level of expectation.
Live.
It's good
with Jason Longshore.
And it's the man from the back.
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
On Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Welcome back. Final segment of Atlanta Soccer Tonight. A special two-hour bonus edition on Sunday night. A post-game show of sorts for the U.S. men's national team. 2-0 winners over Bolivia. Maybe the worst team in the tournament, but a good performance to open the Copa America for the U.S. men's national team. They will be on their way tomorrow, I believe, to Atlanta to prepare for Thursday's match against Panama. I think tickets are still available, although I don't know how many of them are. Thursday night, 6 o'clock at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, game two of the group stage in the Copa America. But you guys who listen to Atlanta Soccer Tonight, you know that I end with a 3-4-3. Now, look, I've changed the format a little bit. We can change the formation on AST. You know, I've got the power to do that if I need to. But this one, it's going to be three players from the weekend, four games to watch this week, and three things that made me smile about this game that I love so much. So let's start with the players. Number one, I talked a little bit about him in the last segment, but Jay Fortune's performance last night for Atlanta United, and honestly, his performances for a little while with Atlanta United, they have been outstanding. The central midfielder developed in the Atlanta United Academy, previous captain of Atlanta United too. He delivered, I think, his best performance in an Atlanta United shirt last night in St. Louis. He had a shot off the bar. He contributed to the attacking portion of the field. He had big tackles and big defensive plays on the defensive side. Fortune is just one of those all-around central midfielders that can give you what you want out of a six, out of a defensive midfielder. He can give you what you want out of an eight, a box-to-box midfielder. And he can give you a little bit of what you want as a number 10, as a playmaker, as somebody who will impact the attacking third of the field as well. Jay Fortune is turning into a top guy in front of our eyes, and he's going to need to be, especially during the stretch of games for Atlanta United this summer. With games coming fast and furious, you're looking to Fortune and others, but especially Jay Fortune when he's in the kind of form that he was last night. You're looking for those big, big performances. Number two on the first three players from the weekend that stood out to me, I'm going to stay local. We're here in downtown Decatur at O'Sullivan's on the Decatur Square. Gareth O'Sullivan, the impresario of Decatur FC in the WPSL. A player who stood out to me, she scored tonight in Decatur FC's win in Chattanooga. She scored and was the player of the game on Friday night against South Georgia Tormenta, Sarah Greiner. Sarah Greiner, the young attacking player for Decatur FC, she's really come into her own in these last few games for the club. Really impressive to see what Greiner has given you. She went to high school at Flowery Branch. She plays at the University of Tennessee in the SEC. She's a player who typically plays off of the wing. Saw her play centrally a little bit on Friday night. Relentless. And I know I've used that word a few times tonight, but I think it applies to Greiner as well. She doesn't give up on plays. She is dynamic. She has good speed. But what I like about her is a little bit of directness in the attacking third. If she gets a lane to take a shot, she's not going to hesitate. She's going to power through and get that opportunity. A player who I didn't know very well coming into this WPSL season with Decatur FC, but a player who is finishing on a high as Decatur FC is chasing the top spot in the WPSL Southeast. And they have a couple of games to do it. They're back home in downtown Decatur next Saturday as they host Nashville Rhythm. And then they go just a little bit across town to Oglethorpe University on Monday, July 1st, where they will face the UFA Gunners, who are right now the number one team in the division. Number three on players from the weekend that stood out to me, Christian Pulisic. Pulisic, Captain America right now. He is in such great form, and he just looks like a different player after the season that he's had at Milan in Serie A. A player who there have always been big expectations for him. He was 17 when he played in his first Copa America, the Copa America Centenario for the U.S. in 2016. He has had big expectations from then. Remember just a year later where it felt like everybody was looking to him and some people were blaming him for the U.S. men's national team's failure to qualify for the 2018 World Cup and that loss down in Trinidad and Tobago. He was still a teenager at that point. He's still very young, but the maturity from him off the field, the maturity from him in a leadership role, and the maturity from the way that he plays, the maturity in his game, really impressive from Christian Pulisic. He opened the scoring, and I think he led by example tonight in making this team, this U.S. men's national team, play like their hair was on fire to start the match against Bolivia. Sometimes you come into games against underdogs, and you come in a little bit slower because you expect you're going to be able to handle things. You don't have the same intensity that you need to. Nuh-uh, not in this case. The U.S. men's national team came out with serious intensity. They almost had a goal in the first 90 seconds. They got one in the first 3 minutes from Pulisic, who assisted on the other one that Folair and Balogun put in before the end of the first half. So next on our modified 3-4-3, four games to watch this weekend. We could even call us a 3-2-2-3 if we want to, because I'm going to give you two games from the Euros and two games from Copa America to keep an eye on this week. Number one, it starts tomorrow, Italy and Croatia, a really interesting game in the European Championships when you look at the table in Group B. I said earlier, I think Spain has been the best team in the tournament so far. They are unbeaten. They have scored four goals. They have not conceded. Italy is number two in the group. They've won and they've lost. They have a goal differential of zero. They're in a pretty good spot here, although they are playing a very talented Croatian team. Albania has gotten a draw. They drew with Croatia last time out, so they have a point on the board. They have a minus one goal differential. Croatia has a minus three goal differential and 1 point. If Croatia wins, you would expect, well, if they win, they will go through unless Albania beat Spain and you're looking for help as a third place team, which you would get if you have 4 points. 4 points as a third place team will get you into the knockouts in the European Championships. Croatia is fully capable of beating Italy tomorrow. I will be very curious to see how Luciano Spalletti, the manager of the Italian national team, approaches this. So many times in tournament play, we have seen Italy be just a rock solid wall defensively. I think Spalletti wants them to be more than that, but do they revert to type a little bit against Croatia in a game that if Italy wins and you expect Spain to deal with Albania and handle their business there, if Italy draws, they will go through as a second place team. They will get into the knockout rounds, and that's where the tournament always starts for Italy. I think they will be able to handle that. I think they will be able to not sweat it. But here's the reason why this is a game to watch. This could be the end of the golden generation for Croatia that got to a World Cup final that has always, for some reason, come up a little bit shorter in the European Championships than in the World Cup. But a team that got to the semifinals last time in the World Cup and a team that has one of the greatest midfielders of this generation in Luka Modric. Is this the last time we see him in a competitive game in that Croatia shirt? It could be if they don't get the job done. So I think they will come out and we will see the best that Croatia can muster at this point against Italy. I don't think it's going to be enough. I think Italy gets it done. I do think I would probably expect a draw in this one, but I think Italy will be able to handle everything that Croatia throws at them. That's tomorrow at 3 o'clock. The other game in the Euros to keep an eye on this week is the Netherlands against Austria. That is on Tuesday at noon. Group D, the Dutch are level with France at the top on 4 points. The Dutch have more goals scored, so they are ahead of France right now. Austria is in third on 3 points in a pretty good spot to advance if that stays. Poland at the bottom of the group with no points. Bartosz Ślisz will be coming back to Atlanta very soon after the match on Tuesday. I don't know if he factors into Atlanta's game against Toronto on the weekend, but Austria is fully capable of beating the Netherlands. I haven't really been all that impressed with the Netherlands. I thought the Netherlands-France game was one of the worst games I've seen this summer, one of the worst games I've seen this year. It was not entertaining. It was not interesting. It was very, very boring. This Dutch team is kind of that. They've scored two goals in two games. They've only conceded once. They're solid. They are not spectacular. They are not interesting. Austria is interesting. They are not as talented as the Dutch, but Ralf Rangnick, with his pressing style, and it's modified a little bit at the national team level. It's not all-out Red Bull press, but it's a variation of it. Austria will not be easy for the Dutch, and I will give you a bold prediction here on this edition of AST on 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app. I think on Tuesday at noon, Austria gets the win over the Netherlands, and Austria goes through not as the first-place team in the group, because I think France will beat Poland, but as the second-place team, and I think the Dutch will go through as the third-place team. Game three to keep an eye on this week, Argentina and Chile. That will be Tuesday night at 9 o'clock. We'll have AST after that one finishes at 11 p.m., an hour back from our usual time on 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app. Argentina and Chile, look, it's always a rivalry game because South American, I think every country has a rival with every country, it seems like. But for these two specifically in the Copa America, remember 2015 or remember 2016 when Chile defeated Argentina in the final in both of those competitions, both times in penalties. One of those was Tata Martino in charge, and that's what led him to walk away from the Argentine national team and walk into Atlanta United from day one. That was a very interesting summer of 2016. That looked like it might have been Lionel Messi's last time with the Argentine national team. He actually retired after that tournament, that Copa America Centenario was completed. Now he came back, and he has obviously been much more successful with his results. But Chile's got the ability to be a difficult team for Argentina in this match on Tuesday night. Argentina, I thought, had a good second half against Canada. I know there was a lot of talk about the field. I don't think the field was the reason for why Argentina struggled in the first 45. I think Canada was the reason why Argentina struggled, and you have to give them that credit. But Argentina persevered and found their way through it. I think they will find their way through it against Chile, but I think it will be a much tighter game than it felt like last Thursday for Argentina and Canada. I think Chile will make it difficult for Argentina. I do think the Argentines will win, but it won't be easy. I think it might be a 1-0 game. We'll talk about it on AST Tuesday night at 11 on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. And don't forget, if you can't stay up with me for some of those late night ASTs, or you can't keep up with all my bonus editions that are popping up this summer, get subscribed to Off the Woodwork wherever you get your podcasts. You can always listen on the Odyssey app as well. Last game to watch this week, I've mentioned it a bunch of times already, USA-Panama in Atlanta at the Benz Thursday, 6 p.m. The biggest, most important game the U.S. men's national team has ever played. Well, not ever played, because it was a Gold Cup semifinal. That's not fair. I don't like to remember that Gold Cup semifinal the U.S. played against Jamaica in 2015. The biggest game the U.S. men's national team has played in a while because of the stakes and maybe a little bit of the uncertainty. Panama is now trailing Uruguay, and they were trailing 1-0. Now they are trailing 3-0. Game's gotten away from them a little bit. Their tournament will come down to if they can beat the U.S. in Atlanta. They will be playing it like it's a final. The U.S. needs to play it in the same way. It should be an amazing watch. I'm really looking forward to it. Tournament soccer is a whole different thing. It is going to be a blast on Thursday night, 6 o'clock. AST postgame show will start at 9 o'clock. I'll be at Reverb by Hard Rock right across the street from the Benz on Thursday after that game. I hope I'll be smiling after that game. There's no guarantees in the sport, as you guys know, but three things that have made me smile about the sport as of late. Number one, talked about Decatur FC a good bit tonight. As I was leaving Decatur Stadium on Friday night after their win over Tormenta, the huge line of kids, boys and girls, wanting to get autographs from Decatur FC players after that game. and knowing who the players were and knowing where they were from and wanting to get pictures. And just, it was so cool to see for a summer league team in their first season, players who are playing in college, to get that opportunity to be superstars to kids. So cool to get a chance to see that. Number two on things that made me smile about the game lately, traveling support for Atlanta United yesterday in St. Louis. The 17s were loud in St. Louis. Over 300 of them, from my understanding. The season ticket holders that took advantage of the away tickets opportunities. Also, fans in the supporters groups who went on their own, and plenty of others. There were a lot of Atlanta United shirts on the plane on my trip up to St. Louis on Saturday morning. Amazing job by the supporters on the road. We saw a lot of them in D.C. as well, but St. Louis being the first time that the Five Stripes were out there, very, very cool. And number three on things that make me smile about the game, the U.S. men's national team back in Atlanta. I mentioned 2015. That was the last time. That was 9 years ago. Before that, it was back to 1977. The U.S. will be playing in Atlanta more with the U.S. Soccer Federation building its national training center and its headquarters just south of town in Trillith. Expect that. You're going to see the U.S. men's national team. You're going to see the U.S. women's national team here in Atlanta quite a bit. But this is a special one, and this is a game with a different level of expectation. I think a different level of intensity. And it will be one that if you are a soccer fan in this city and you don't have a ticket yet already and you can get there on Thursday, this is one you will not want to miss. Still have a few more days before we get ready for that one. We still have another AST before we get ready for that one. I'll be back with you on Tuesday night, 11 o'clock after the Argentina-Chile match for another special AST during the summer of soccer. Jason Longshore, thank you so much for hanging out with me on a Sunday night. Adios, everybody.
Diabetes, high blood pressure, anxiety meds, everyone's on them. If you're a 40-year-old male, maybe a bit porky, and you may even have type 2 diabetes, $1 million of term life insurance may only cost you about $100 a month. Call Term Provider. Speak with Big Lou at 800-353-9057. Big Lou will find a term life policy for you even if you have type 2 diabetes, are overweight, or have high blood pressure. Term Provider has helped thousands of people like you who think they can't afford term life insurance. To buy $1 million of affordable term life for you, all you need to do is call Big Lou at 800-353-9057. Lou will make sure the scales are tipped in your favor. Call 800-353-9057. Big Lou will answer your call and work to fit you into a term life policy that you can afford. Remember, Big Lou's like you. He's on meds too. For affordable term life insurance, call 800-353-9057, 800-353-9057, or biglou.com.
The only downside to Taco Bell's Cravings value menu is having to decide. It's got 10 different favorites for $3 or less. How do I choose between the super beefy cheesy double beef burrito, the crunchy loaded beef nachos, the pillowy three cheese chicken flatbread, or the...